have straight up negotiate the Lori Loughlin deal before she
And yet who went to jail for longer? You know,
Exactly.
Deadshot. But that's because he killed people, guys.
Right,
We're
right.
not comparing the two. He killed a lot of people.
Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shans.
And I'm Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're looking at the worst superhero movies ever and seeing if they're fun or straight up dumb on
Cape or Cap, a bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast. Welcome to our bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast that we're calling Cape or Cap.
This is where we take the worst superhero movies imaginable and see if they're fun or just crap.
My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year the Nutty Professor won Best Makeup and Hairstyling at the Academy Awards. Yes, it was.
Oh man. Wow. This, like, there are so many monumental films that have won that award, including the one that we're talking about today. Fun fact, this is, I tend to do a an Oscar party with some friends, mm-hmm. and this was the movie that helped me win that year because I guessed right and it beat out movies. I think it was like, I don't remember what else was there, but there was like creatures were like literally being created. But none of them got the makeup award because that title went to DCEU's Suicide Squad.
Indeed. I cannot believe that 20 years after after Nutty Professor, exactly 20 years.
We've seen the Nutty Professor. That is monumental work in hair and makeup, honestly. One man played 15 characters.
Yes, and to answer your question, Suicide Squad beat out A Man Called Ove and Star Trek Beyond.
Star Trek Beyond, that's what it was. Legit created aliens, but Harley Quinn getting two shades of mascara was what won.
That was also back when only three movies could be nominated for Best Makeup. I don't know why, but that's how it was.
Well, and if you're wondering why we're talking about a live action film, well, as we mentioned, this is our bonus season here that we are calling Cape or Cap, in honor of the multiverse ending crisis event that's currently happening in the DC animated films. We decided to take a look at other films across the multiverse that left us anticipating the impending doom of their universes.
Yes, I don't know that the DCU was in rough shape at the time. It was having some growing pains, and those growing pains stayed for a while, didn't they?
Yes, this was film number three, so this was already a strikeout, possibly. So at the end of our episode here, we will determine if the film has truly earned its cape in the universe, or was the hype all around it capped? Because again, in films like Suicide Squad, we were excited to see the cast list that was popping up, new reimagined versions of all the characters. So when you hear just all of these stories of who's involved and what we're going to see, and especially this larger connection to larger universes, again, we were really, really rooting for this universe back in the day.
And a disclaimer right at the start, we are not going to be here to just bash DC. Trust me, other superhero universes are going to get a piece of this. And we'll tell you when soon. But right now, we got to dive into this 2016 Suicide Squad.
Yes, because at a runtime of 122 minutes, this film was directed by David Ayer. His name is, I think it's finally off of Twitter now. I believe that Release the Ayer Cut is finally moving down on the list of hashtags. but you will know David Ayer because he was the director behind productions like Bright, starring Will Smith. The recent film Beekeeper, starring Jason Statham. Also, End of Watch, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña.
What a resume.
A resume indeed. That continues on because he also wrote films, including this one, such as Training Day, SWAT, and the first Fast and Furious film.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, sir.
Yes. That is an impressive resume. I think I rewatch all those at least like once a month. All right, so hopping onto our cast list, we have a very star-studded cast today. A lot of these people were either new to the scene of the superhero storytelling or just like had already made names for themselves outside throughout generations, such as Will Smith, who is playing Floyd Lawton, a.k.a. Deadshot. Following up after him, we got Jared Leto as the Joker, who, you know, many people know him as the frontman for 30 Seconds to Mars. Other films also, but this was when everyone was shocked to hear that Jared Leto had entered the acting world, and that will continue on as Morbius.
Oh, we'll get there. Trust us.
Oh, yes.
If you let us, we'll get there.
Margot Robbie plays Dr. Harley Quinzel, aka Harley Quinn, bringing the character for the first time on the bigger screen. Notice I didn't say the screen in general. The character has been in live action and animation for quite some time. Joel Kinnaman is Colonel Rick Flagg. And we got Jay Courtney as Digger Harkness, a.k.a. Captain Boomerang. Jay Hernandez is Chato Santana, a.k.a. El Diablo. I like how they called him, like the entire film they called him Diablo, but he's actually credited as El Diablo. And I was just like, yo, where's the, my English lessons are failing me now, but like, where's the definitive article on his name?
It's bold to assume that anyone in the production really thought about the Spanish when they were making this.
Next up, we got Adewale Akinyue Agbaje. We have him playing Waylon Jones, a.k.a. Killer Croc. Cara Delevingne is Dr. June Moon, a.k.a. Enchantress. And we have a bunch of supporting cast members, such as Ike Barinholtz as Captain Hunter Griggs of Bel-Rev, Adam Beach as Christopher Weiss, a.k.a. Slipknot, who is in it for a very short period of time. And I feel like after one scene, I'm pretty sure everybody wanted him gone. We got David Harbour, who is government official Dexter Tolliver. This was before he became the Red Guardian, was it?
And Hellboy.
Hellboy, yes. This was the beginning, people. This.
We're already listing so many other movies that'd be a candidate for this podcast.
Jim Parrick is from True Blood. You know him from True Blood, but today he's playing one of Joker's head henchmen. I didn't catch his name. I don't think they even said his name during the film.
Henchy. I'm going to call him Henchy.
Yes. Nice little call back to Young Justice. Common is a character playing Monster T in the movie, but DC actually gave this character a better backstory in another show that they produced. Care to guess which one, Andrew?
I'm going to guess Harley Quinn.
Actually, I'm gonna have to check back to see if he was in there, but no, you will remember him as Lala in Black Lightning.
Oh,
he's
the tattoo man. Wow, did they fumble that bag?
Next up, we got Scott Eastwood, who's playing Sergeant GQ Edwards. It's really weird that your name is GQ. I need to know what the Q stands for. We got some cameo appearances from Ben Affleck as Batman and Ezra Miller as The Flash, the fastest criminal alive. And finally, rounding out our main cast, we have Viola Davis bringing Amanda Waller in what I think is the best live adaptation of this character.
Yeah, no shade to the actresses who portrayed her on Arrow. You were great. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, killed off for this movie. That is a fact. Sorry, you were great.
All right, so with that, we're going to get ourselves ready to boom tube over to the beginning of 2016's Suicide Squad.
Boy, oh boy, do you like character introductions? Because that's all you get for 19 minutes. I counted. I was like, I remember the movie starting with a bunch of character introductions, and wanted to see how far and how ridiculous this goes. We are introduced to characters for 12 minutes straight. In that time, we have seven character intros. We understand that you might get a little confused because the movie actually starts by introducing Deadshot and Harley Quinn in their cells, being subject to black cell security guard brutality. Then we're going like, hey, Superman's dead. Amanda Waller's saying, hey, Superman's dead. Smash cut to the credits. And then we get 12 minutes of intros. So the editing here is it's interesting.
Interesting. I will say though, I did one of my favorite moments about this. It's not even about the movie itself. It was about the experience of when I first saw this film. In the theater, movie starts. Amanda Waller's like, 9 months ago, Superman flew across the sky, and then one day he didn't any longer because Superman was killed. And I want to shout out this one parent that probably brought their like 5-year-old child to come and see this movie. Why? I don't know, but hey, do what you need to do. The child then yells out, "Hold up, they killed Superman?" And that set the entire tone up for the film for the rest of the night. Like, honestly.
Someone wasn't taken to see BVS. So the setup of this movie is that Amanda Waller is at dinner. The first scene with Harley Quinn and Deadshot actually doesn't matter because nothing actually happens in that. So the first scene of this movie truly is Amanda Waller is at dinner with two government guys, and she's trying to convince one that they need to start a suicide squad of criminals. And she goes and pulls out seven files of criminals. We don't need to go down into each detail of each of them because we don't. Big
But it's
ones, I
clear who
think,
though
are
who gets favored though. It's clear who is favored for our film.
100%. I mean, I think the big ones are Deadshot and Harley. So I'll go dive into Deadshot. His backstory is he is a assassin that often haggles for price during while he's on the job. And after one job, he is walking down the street with his daughter, who he does not have custody of for really good reasons. And Batman jumps him because for some reason Deadshot decided to walk down a dark alley in Gotham with his daughter.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's like this, like you were calling for Batman to happen,
I
honestly.
think he wanted this to happen. Deadshot tries to kill Batman, but his daughter stands in between him and Batman. And the funny thing about this scene, when you really look at it, Deadshot asks his daughter to get out of the way. So Deadshot is ready and willing to kill Batman in front of his daughter. Even though minutes before he was like, "Who told your mom said I kill people for a living? What do you mean?" Well, I mean, maybe this is why your daughter thinks you kill people for a living. I maybe.
Also, I love the fact that she like stands in front of him. And granted, he's kneeling in the film, so it's just like the angles might be off. But like, if he actually moved the gun like maybe a centimeter higher, he actually would have made the shot. So it's like, what were we telling here? Because like, I feel like as Deadshot, he would have thought about that and just like, oh, moves up gun. Takes out Batman, runs Gotham. I feel like it's a very simple formula here.
Yeah. And if you're wondering when this happened,
Oh
yeah,
yeah,
we don't
no.
know.
I think it was a Christmas. Like he's buying her gifts, and it seems to be snowing, which is like I don't know what state does that anymore around Christmas anymore.
Right. Ooh, dystopian. But yeah. So when does this, what time of year is it? When does it take place to the rest of the events of the film? Doesn't matter because now here's Harley Quinn.
Yeah, we get introduced to Harley through the full-on origin story of hers. She's the psychiatrist coming in to deal with a bunch of Arkham inmates. She gets tasked to try and help the Joker, but as we know from her story, she gets swayed. He ends up asking her because now that she's so enamored by him, he ends up asking her for a machine gun. And somehow Harley is able to bring in a machine gun, which we don't see the process. We don't see the process at all of how she brought the machine gun in. But also, we also don't see the process of like, he also gets all of his like gang. There's like 50 people who just storm Arkham and they take her captive. leading to now Joker creating this, like, giving her, I guess, what was it, shock therapy to turn her wild in a way. And I'm just like, this just doesn't seem like the natural trend, like, moment of events to get to when you just ask for a machine gun. Because, like, how did you get 50 people to roll up?
Right. It would have made so much more sense if he asked her to open the door.
Yeah.
Because if he just needed his gang with the machine guns, I think they knew where he was. They could have done it at any time.
True.
So I think, yeah, it would have made more sense for him to be like, "Can you give me the code?" And also it makes Harley look better because she's just like, "Oh, opening the door. You know, that's not bad. No one's gonna get hurt." That would have been kind of interesting to explore. But
I'm just
no.
gonna point this one thing out. That is exactly how it went down on Prison Break. Spoiler, for anyone, that is the exact storyline from Prison Break. So, I mean, and it worked there. It clearly worked well there.
Sorry, you had about 15 years
Yes,
to avoid
exactly.
that spoiler.
So we then learn that Harley gets swayed and turns into Dr. Quinzel turns into Harley Quinn, the Joker's new favorite partner in crime. And we see now that this is when we get the sense of, like, this movie is supposed to be taking place in modern times, I guess, because Joker is a crime boss, I guess, in some way. Harley is dancing out on stage, and someone's coming in to meet him, Monster T, Common's character. And he's looking at Harley. He's like, "Yo, Harley looks good." Joker calls Harley over, and they just start toying with him to the point where it's just like, it's very awkward because even Commons is like, "Yo, I didn't want no beef," which Joker keeps repeating to him. And then Joker ends up just shooting him in the head. And my entire question about this whole scene was that, why did we create a Joker where it wasn't always just on site for Batman? I feel like Joker being in a club, just relaxing, chilling, grabbing some drinks, popping bottles with his boys and his people, that is not a Joker that actually should exist in Gotham. Because I feel like, as aggro as we saw Batman was in BVS, Batman should have just never let Joker sleep. This Joker should be on the run 24/7. He should not be able to relax. Also, all the people in the club, why were they there if they knew Joker was there?
Yeah, they try to make Joker into kind of a penguin-like figure who runs a business and is kind of like he's doing shady stuff, obviously, but you can't get him for anything. You know, that's but it's like, no, this is a Joker. Like if he's breathing, he's committing a crime.
So all that leads to, I guess, Joker escaping, Batman's in following after him, and this is when we see that Joker does abandon Harley here and lets Harley crash into the river, where she tries to attack Batman underwater. Batman, like, shark punches her, and this is where we see that this is how Harley was taken into custody.
Right. So now that that's established, we get a montage of more introductions featuring actual lines such as Boomerang robbed every bank in Australia. I'm sure Australia has more than 10 banks, so how is that possible? Diablo, the pyrokinetic homeboy. I didn't edit that. Killer Croc chased out of Gotham by the Bat. Questions about that. But she saves the best for last, and she reveals that while archaeologist June Moon was out on a trip, she was in a Amazonian club or something outside, and a dancing enchantress came up to her and danced inside of her body, and enchantress permanently possesses June Moon. So in order to counter this, Amanda Waller assigns Rick Flagg, her best colonel, to hopefully fall in love with June Moon and for June Moon to fall in love with him so that she has a mean for controlling the Enchantress. How did Amanda Waller know that
Exactly.
was going to work?
It's like she's probably just, like, looking through his entire Hinge profiles. I don't even know if Hinge was a thing back then, but, like, she's like, what is he swiping right on? It's just like, oh, they look like June Moon. Is that was that the process? I don't know. because that none of this makes sense.
Yeah. Despite none of it making sense, the one government guy that isn't David Harbour, we're saying this because names are not important in this movie, except for the...
He's also gone in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. So after this dinner meeting, they go to another meeting where they once again have to pitch the Suicide Squad again to another group of people, which makes you think, why wasn't this just one scene? Right. And David Harbour leads with, hey, you know what? What if Superman decided to tear the roof off the White House? What will we do? This is why we should have a Suicide Squad. Here's a question I'd like to point out. Could this team defeat Superman? No, sorry. Let me make it easier. How long would this team of Suicide Squad team last against Superman? Just Man of Steel Superman. How long? How long?
Well, I'll probably give it to Enchantress. Like, because I feel like Superman's weak against just like basically the simplest magic trick. But like at the same time, I feel like if he could just run up and just real quick.
Right. Cause remember, guys, this
also
Superman,
when she's June Moon.
You're like, right. Also... Exactly. Before she even does anything. And this is a Superman who a movie later takes on the entire Justice League when he's not even in his right mind. He just woke up from a long nap and he takes them all on unconsciously, ultra instinct. So a Superman that can think against this Suicide Squad, I don't know what you think is going to happen. Except them all
instant
dying.
Death. We get taken over by Krypton. Get ready to learn some Kryptonian language.
This is a Suicide Squad after all. But yeah, during this meeting, we get probably my favorite visual of the movie, where Amanda Waller asks June Moon to change into Enchantress, and Enchantress's hand comes under June's, and it flips, and then it becomes Enchantress. And honestly, really slick transition. Wish we could have gotten a little bit more of that. Instead, Enchantress goes and steals military secrets from Tehran. And then, now that Suicide Squad is approved, you know what it's time for? More character intros.
Yeah, we hop over to Bell Rev, where basically Amanda Waller is going to go meet every single person that she wants on her team. She enters in the room. Harley sees her first, asks if she's the devil. She keeps on walking. And as she's like questioning people about like, hey, we're signing you up for this. My favorite interactions about these were when she went to El Diablo's little, he's like in this like, I don't know, it's like this like canister that I guess they think is flood with water in case he gets too hot. And she's like showing him a video of when he burned down the entire yard of like when he was in prison and killed everybody. And she was like, he's like, y'all, nah, man, that's not me. She's like, oh, this ain't you? This ain't you right here? You burning down everybody? This ain't you. I think it's those moments that made the movie better for me. Because it's immediately followed up also with them meeting Deadshot. And Deadshot basically being put in front of an entire table filled with guns. One of the guards, Ike Barinholtz's character, Griggs, he's been like antagonizing Deadshot for so long. So Deadshot pulls the gun and points it at him, asks people that if he dies, please, please like take this man out and also delete my search history. And when Lawton realizes that the gun is loaded, it's now him basically shooting out things, perfect accuracy, perfect targets. Everybody's so impressed with what he could do. In fact, it was so impressive that they had to score, I think, what was it? Ye's Skinhead album through the entire scene.
But also, the targets are all stationary. Is it that impressive?
Yeah, like that was something I was just like, if you just like keep it steady, like I've never shot a gun, but I would assume that if you're stable enough, you could keep it in the same target. But it does lead into now Will demanding, I'm calling him Will because this was the most Fresh Prince of Bel-Air scenario I think I've ever seen in my life, where he's talking to Flag. He's like, yo, if you want me to be on your team, I'm going to need you to you know, set up meetings for me to meet with my daughter, get rid of my ex-wife, dusty old boyfriend, Darnell. He was like, shoot, all right, Darnell's gone. He's like, make sure that my daughter goes to school. I want something Ivy League. Do that thing that y'all be doing to fix up people's scores in case she goes down. And I was just like, this man have straight up negotiate the Lori Loughlin deal before she did.
And yet who went to jail for longer?
Exactly. You know?
Deadshot. But that's because he killed people, guys. We're not comparing the two. he killed a lot of people. He should be in jail. Flag raises objections to the squad after they do all of this. At this point in my question, I have another question for you. Why are they assembling the Suicide Squad right now?
Exactly. There's been no threat. Superman is dead. What are we fighting against?
Exactly. And because there is no established threat in the movie has to just spontaneously create one. So, coincidentally, at two separate times, Joker is lying in the middle of his knife collection, which also features baby clothes. If you look in the corner, which I was like, nice little detail. That's not followed up on. So... The Joker starts a journey to free Harley Quinn from the Bel-Rev prison. At the same time, Rick is, for some reason, eating a drumstick at 11 p.m. He's just eating a turkey drumstick while sharing a bed with June Moon. And that really threw me off, the drumstick. For like a minute, I wasn't paying attention to dialogue. It's like, why is he eating a drum? It's so late.
It was, he had the drumstick in one hand and then the gun in another. And I was just like, yo, my man, are you all right?
Who's coming for your drumstick, bro?
Also, wouldn't your hands get greasy? I feel like, put down the gun.
I feel like this is dangerous. I feel like we need to talk to an expert about, can you do both? Should you do both?
Is another question.
But in any case, so while he's so distracted and we're so distracted with the drumstick, Enchantress hops out of her room to try to steal from Amanda, because earlier it's established that the reason Enchantress is going along with any of this is because the suitcase, Amanda has Enchantress's heart, like Davy Jones, in a suitcase. And she can stab it at any time. So Enchantress can't get close to the heart without alerting Amanda. So, coincidentally, in the next room, Enchantress's brother just happens to be in a statue. So Enchantress takes the statue, unleashes it on a random dude from that was in the security meeting, and tells her brother, hey, we were betrayed thousands of years ago by humans. Now humans worship machines. So let's build a machine to kill everybody. There is nothing more to that.
Yeah,
that's really it. Is. That's all the motivation you're going to get.
And this leads into now apparently everybody going crazy, because the same brother, he's walking through this possessed human being. He pretends to fake like a medical condition to get people close to him. And this is where we see the extent of his powers, where he just basically absorbs other people to become bigger. And then he falls into the train tracks, and then he absorbs the electricity from the train tracks. And then there's this one scene in which it makes Omni-Man very proud, where he's just standing very still as the train comes through him. There's a lot going on, to the point where it's just like, we see all this destruction happening, and then it's daytime. We find out that Midway City is basically destroyed. So this is where the government agency, I'm assuming this is Argus, because I think I saw some lettering and some logos mm-hmm. placed around. They call in that they decide it's time for them to set up the Suicide Squad. So now we hop back over to daytime. Because, again, the call for the Suicide Squad was at night. We hop back over to daytime, where the Suicide Squad gets, like, pulled from their cells. They're strapped to chairs. They're being brought over to have the implants put into their necks. Everybody's making some commentary about what's happening, what's going on. And they get flown over to the middle of an evacuation site in Midway City. Again, now it's daytime again. People are being like carted through to get to safe zones. They are dropped off. And then we see more members of the Suicide Squad being brought in, such as Captain Boomerang, who gets brought in like basically a duffel bag. And Flag is just like, here he is, 10 pound, like 12 pounds of shit in a 10 pound bag. And it's like, what? So opens up the thing. Boomerang starts punching people, realizes he's outnumbered. And then we got another character, Slipknot, the man who can climb anything, who is casually brought out of a car in handcuffs, or at least it's restrained. And there's a woman there, a soldier, who says, like, get in line. And Slipknot just punches her in the face. Like, straight up decks her. And this is when the movie was just like, okay, we're not in our feminist bag right now with this film.
No, this movie doesn't seem to like women very much. This, because there's a scene a minute later where everyone watches Harley Quinn change, all the soldiers and evacuees, because she gets changed in public, which is a scene that's unnecessary from both points of view. I don't know why Harley would do this, and I don't know why everyone would stop and watch.
This is why it went from day to night. I think that's the only reason why.
So in a weird thing, most Suicide Squad stories take about 5 minutes to establish. They get bombs in their necks, and if they don't listen to Amanda, it explodes. They just do it now, just in the middle of everything else. Once they find out that they're being sent somewhere very bad to do some good, quotes from the movie, we get a zoom in to Deadshot, who says Amanda Waller's on Zoom, but to the Zoom, Deadshot says, "What are we, some kind of Suicide Squad?"
And that's when Peter Griffin stood up and just said, he did the thing. He said the thing.
Peter Griffin was great in this.
Bring him back.
So, okay. Now the movie looks like it might finally be getting started to the Suicide Squad bit. But before we can do that, one more character introduction. Katana. And Rick Flag, knowing that we don't have time for another flashback, says, "This is Katana. She's got my back. Her sword traps the souls of its victims." Now, after this blistering introduction, you may be wondering, why is Katana here?
Well, we get a flashback about that. But also, it does not explain how Katana even met them, because it's basically Katana killing people. Killing the same people who killed her husband, which is the comic book origin history of hers. And she's killing someone that he's like, yeah, I wasn't even the one that killed him. And she was like, but you watched. And then slices his throat. We hop back over to the scene of just them meeting Katana on the flight. So we have no idea of like how Katana got even under Amanda Waller's radar whatsoever, or why she's aligned with Flag.
Yeah, she doesn't have a bomb in her neck, so this is voluntary.
No, this is super voluntary. Yeah, this is her just basically doing community service, but the good kind of community service.
So from here, finally, we get into the Suicide Squad out in the world. They're on a helicopter into the city. It crashes. Yeah. Everyone's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, this is actually the funny thing about this. This is typical Suicide Squad fashion storytelling, though. But usually, at least one person dies. So it was weird that everybody survived.
Well, you got what you wished for in the next scene, didn't you?
Oh, well, that's very true. Because in that moment, Boomerang is just antagonizing Slipknot, telling him that, like, yo, I think this is all mind games, conspiracy theories. And he says, you know what? Maybe We should all just try to make our escape. And Slipknot agrees, so they start beating people up. Some of the soldiers, Slipknot, the man who can climb anything, uses a grapple hook to escape, bring himself up to the top of the building. And as he's like basically trying to go from building to building, Rick Flag pulls out his I don't know, it's like a giant computer. It's like a smartphone just attached to his wrist, and presses this logo, the image of Slipknot, on his screen. And we see how mind-blowing this technology is that Amanda Waller has given to this entire Suicide Squad.
I also have I have many questions. So Slipknot is the man who can climb anything. We know that. Everyone knows that, right? Yeah. Oh, what was he going to do here? Against a change? Against a magical witch who can teleport and make zombies? How was his climbing going to help here? Does he have a gun?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like, Slipknot definitely did it. So now that everybody can see what's going on, this is where Deadshot's just like, one, he got upset because earlier in the movie, again, I also want to preface that this is an hour into the film. This movie was only 2 hours. We are already at the midway point, and we have not actually gotten to anything. So Deadshot has already been upset with Rick Flag because in an earlier scene, he was unimpressed by Rick Flag's pep talk, tells him that he needs to watch some Phil Jackson triangle, you know. And then he's like, all right, because it seems like this truly is a suicide mission, he starts talking with Harley. It's just like, hey, maybe we should orchestrate a plan to finally get ourselves out of here. Tell the rest of the crew, stay evil. And now we get to the big point of the film, I guess, where they come face to face with these monstrous beings that they thought were human, but are actually, I don't even know how to describe these things. These are like just little like clay men, but not clay face, but with many, many, maybe with eyes. It's very confusing.
It reminded me a little bit of the infected from Last of Us with the mushroom fungus heads.
Yes. Okay. But minus all of the mushroom actual looks. It was just, yeah. I see that.
So the zombies attack. And here we get some fight scenes. All the Suicide Squad members show off their abilities. Diablo stands in the back. We get a really confusing exchange here during it. Also, I want to mention that the Suicide Squad is accompanied by a full battalion of soldiers.
Oh, right.
Which makes you question why the soldiers are there if they have the Suicide Squad. And also, if the Suicide Squad's there, why do you send the soldiers? I thought the point was that you send the Suicide Squad to do the stuff you don't want the soldiers to do. Why are they all there? Only Rick Flag needs to be there. Why is Scott Eastwood here? But in the middle of this, Rick Flag is getting snatched up by the zombies. And Deadshot says, Harley, let's help Rick, because if he dies, we die. A minute ago, were you not planning on killing Rick Flag?
Exactly.
Wasn't this convenient for you?
And it was like, I don't understand. Like, how would they know? Like, is it like linked to them? Like, y'all had no escape plan. Literally, again, like, you're right. A minute ago, you're ready to escape. But now it's like, you didn't know how you were going to do that. So now you just got to protect Rick Flag. So motivations are off. Motivations are clearly off. You did not have the best eye on that one, Deadshot. So as they take out, or at least Deadshot solos the entire army that's like trying to kill them, they notice that the creatures tend to have some very like, just random things on them, random expensive things, including like a $3,000 watch. I don't know why that had to be stressed in the film. But we do see that, again, not knowing what time and place this takes place in, but it seems as if soldiers were probably sent there first, but then we're all captured by Enchantress, because we see in where Enchantress is being held up, where she has like basically operating her machine that does not look like a machine whatsoever. It literally looks like she just created magic in a portal and that was it. Every time she kisses a soldier, it turns them into one of the members of her thrall, these like weird beings. And we don't get much more of that. It just leads us into now they keep on with their mission, which was said very quickly, I realized at the very beginning that
their mission?
It was to find someone that was trapped there.
Oh, right.
Right. But the same way that I forgot about that too. And then they were like, all right, the person is going to be in that building there, which Easter egg, it was named after the creator, Ostrander. So they're like, we're going to enter the building. We're going to take out who's ever in there, save the person who's in there. Everybody goes back happy. They get years or something off their life sentences and you're good to go.
I'm just realizing that's why they brought Slipknot. to get her from the build. To get the VIP. That's the only reason he was there. He can do what literally anyone else can with the grappling hook.
Colin, you're like basic rock climber. You'll be fine.
They go into a building that looks, you know, the Ostrander building that doesn't really look distinct from any other building we've been in, which doesn't really help.
Funny thing is, though, it looks very CGI. To me, when I saw it, I was just like, did y'all just put a fake building? Like, also, how was this building untouched in, like, the rubble, where it's just like, there's, like, a fallen plane, like, 2 steps away, but this building was completely fine?
Right, and it's infected, but the VIP is unaffected by the monsters that are in the building. Anyway, so they fight a bunch of monsters. The action is... It happens. They kill some monsters. There's a couple cool shots, but I also was stuck on the fact that Deadshot puts on a plastic mask that seems to obscure his vision. And unlike in a future movie, Bloodsport, his mask can protect him from bullets and is complete. You can see through the visor. Not quite sure why Deadshot wants this plastic mask that makes it harder on him. Anyway, in the middle of the fight, when they're being overwhelmed by zombies that can apparently shoot guns, they can. Deadshot pisses off Diablo enough, so Diablo unleashes fire, kills a bunch of zombies. And at this point, in the middle of apropos of absolutely nothing, we get a flashback from Harley Quinn.
Yeah, again, diving into her origin story, is a moment scored by the musical stylings of Kehlani, I believe is the artist. Fun fact about this film, we actually didn't mention this. This entire film had a whole entire album created for it that included the likes of like 21 Pilots, Lil Wayne, Rick Ross, Kehlani, a bunch of other people. So this whole entire scene, Harley Quinn is being asked by Joker, will you die for me? Or better yet, will you live for me? As she leaps into the vat of chemicals from Ace Chemicals, transforming her now into this like her more iconic look, which she was Joker when he notices that it's taking her a bit of time to get back up. He leaps in after her. They share a kiss. Harley is snapped out of this dream state by Deadshot, who asked him, have you ever been in love? He's like, no. It is a moment that happens in the film as they head up to now where the room is. And we find out finally who's in this room, because as Rick Flagg enters the space, we see that it's Amanda Waller.
Yeah, so now we finally understand what the movie is. All right, everyone buckle in. So, Amanda Waller was putting together the Suicide Squad. She pissed off Enchantress too much. Enchantress and her brother started taking over the Midway City while Amanda Waller happened to be there. So, Amanda Waller orders the Suicide Squad to assemble to extract her from Midway City, to stop the Enchantress that she herself unleashed into the world.
So it looks like Superman was not the thing we should be worried about. So now that everybody knows it's Amanda Waller, everyone is displeased about this, but Amanda shows that she is that one, telling everybody that if they try to do anything, she will blow it off their heads. So she tells them to lead her up to the evacuation point, which is a helicopter, which is conveniently waiting at the on top of the building to take her over.
Before we go too far, I want to mention Amanda Waller kills all her employees.
Oh, right.
before they leave the building. Rick Flag is cool with it. He's no objections whatsoever to this. Why? This is so
didn't have security clearance. That was the reason.
But this is so tonally inconsistent with his character. Like, he later is going to be doing some really nice things. So he just watched people get murdered for no reason, even more than have already been murdered because of his girlfriend. I don't understand why he's cool with it. But, you know, you got to get to the helicopter,
which has now been taken over by Joker. Because throughout the film, we do see that Griggs, who was taken by Joker doing at one point earlier in the film, is now working with him in terms of like just making sure that Harley was able to get a cell phone while she was going to be out on this mission, meaning that Joker knew about this entire plan. So he takes over this helicopter. Also, earlier in the scene, Joker was able to head to the facility where they create the bombs. Fun fact, it was a subsidiary of Wayne Enterprises. So as he is now like working with this doctor to cancel out the signal to the bomb in Harley's neck, Harley takes this as an opportunity to run on over to the helicopter, grab onto the rope that's like hanging from it as they try to take off. And we get the moment of our film where it's like, we have to find out where allegiances lie because Amanda's pissed. She looks over at Deadshot and it's just like, hey, you're a hired assassin. You're a gun. Shoot Harley right now and I will free you from your imprisonment so you can see your daughter.
Of course, he has this moment of regret and he misses on purpose. And this is going to make so much sense later. Later on, we're going to explain what happened to this movie. Why is it like this? And this moment is going to make so much sense to you later.
Okay, good, because it not makes any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. Why does Deadshot care if Harley lives or dies when his motivation has been escape, get out, be free? Why would he not kill Harley? We'll get to that later. Also find it funny that the shot was not that far away. I think Rick Flag could have done it. Like anyone actually could have done it.
Don't even give me that nonsense of like, oh, the helicopter would have messed with the trajectory of the bullet because of the wind pattern. No, I feel like the gun could have made it.
It's a straight shot, honestly. Yeah. Like, shortly after Harley escapes, Amanda Waller orders the chopper to be brought down. Joker goes down with the chopper, but Harley escapes. Immediately after that, Waller gets on a helicopter. It is brought down. So I think this movie is telling us don't get on any helicopters ever. Because that's the third helicopter in this movie to be shot down.
There are other modes of transportation, people. Please take that before you take the helicopter here in the DC universe. So then as Amanda Waller's helicopter falls, she's taken by the thrall of an Enchantress to be brought over to where she is currently. This is when Flags is like, all right, well, our boss is down. We got to go get her again. So they go to the helicopter. Deadshot comes across the same binder from the beginning of the film that details every single member of the team. And he throws it at Flag. But somehow it feels like it's only 30 seconds, but somehow he's able to go through the entire thing to find out that Flag was in this relationship with Moon. And that apparently he explains in the scene, when that Amanda Waller of the U.S. government had initially sent in the U.S. soldiers to first combat what was going on because they didn't really know the full extent. So their plan was to use a smaller team to go in, plant the bomb to take out the brother of Enchantress, whose name is Incubus in the film. Enchantress was supposed to help in some way. He asked, so Flag asked June to help turn into Enchantress and help in this way. And as they get ready to set the bomb and turn it on, Enchantress takes the bomb herself and I guess like steals it from it. This was what causes Flag to yell out. She bolted, which was a scene earlier in the film, which now provides a bit more context. Amanda's pissed. She's stabbed in the heart. Enchantress goes to her brother, who heals her from being harmed by the heart again. And now this is when everybody's just like, and much like me, I was just like, I need to grab a drink because I don't know what's going on anymore. Leading into a moment of a cathartic moment amongst the Suicide Squad as we get, I guess, like an hour and a half. So 34% of this film is done. And we get another origin story, this time from El Diablo.
Yeah, so everyone gives, so the entire team gives up, and I have to mention this because Katana gives up too. Why?
Why? Yeah.
Aren't you a
I think she just
volunteer?
wanted a drink. I think she
Yeah.
just wanted a volunteer.
So we get Diablo's backstory, which was he had fire powers as a kid, and as he grew, his fire powers grew. And then one day he got mad while his girlfriend was pressing him about his illegal activities. And in his rage, he ended up burning down the house, and his wife and kids did not survive. This backstory is almost there. I wish here that a gang banger, a rival, would have come to his house, tried to kill his family. He lost control and then killed his family. Because as it's currently presented, he had a temper tantrum, killed everyone, and that's the backstory. And everyone's weeping, feeling bad for him. And of course, it's a tragedy, but that's on you, bro. Like, that's 100% on you.
I mean, Harley was right when she said it. Own that shit. Like, honestly,
Own
yes, you should own that.
that. I don't want to own that. So we get some little excerpts from the characters. Killer Croc says he's beautiful on the outside. At one point, Flag comes into the bar. He asks Deadshot, "Did you get to the part where I had sex with a witch?" And Deadshot goes, "Yeah, what's that like?" These are lines in the movie, guys. We're not making these up. And here it's revealed. Oh my goodness gracious. Rick Flag reveals that Deadshot's daughter writes to him every day, which is not practical. No one at any era of time would have written every day. She would have taken a day off. Secondly, Rick Flag's been carrying them around all day.
Right. I just realized that. Where did he put the
Yeah, because I froze the frame also and realized that he is carrying exactly 28 letters. So you say she's writing every day? Has he been in prison for 28 days exactly? Is this
Wow.
all happening within a month, Black History Month? I don't know.
Crimes of this movie.
So this act of Flag having the letters motivates Deadshot to go and do the mission. Why? What has changed? What has changed?
I guess really is just Boomerang learning that he's free because Rick Flag destroys the device, quickly grabs his drink and heads on out. So they just lose a squad member. But then when everybody's just like, we're gonna go and handle this because they're all motivated now behind Deadshot, who is now the de facto leader, it seems. He meets back up with them right outside. So they don't lose anybody. Now, this is when we're just gonna speed through this because this is the same thing the movie did, where they finally get work together to take out Incubus, the brother. They make the plan. They're like, let's work back alongside with the soldiers. Scott Eastwood is planning to head into the water, Navy SEAL style, to get the bomb that was placed there for some reason. Never really explained how the bomb actually got there.
Or how they know it was there.
Right.
It fell underwater. It's the likelihood of it being in the same place is zero.
Zero. Yeah. So they decide to work together. Boomerang has like a camera that he uses that's in this boomerang to see what's going on. Killer Croc says when he realizes they have to go in the water, he's just like, nah, man, this is my hood. And just crawls like an alligator to get underwater, or crocodile. I guess it's a crocodile.
Mm, yeah.
So, sorry, I'm trying to hold it together. So now that they have this bomb, because there's like some random moment in which they have to fight some of the creatures again, Killer Croc takes it on. He passes it back to Scott Eastwood, who brings it to right under where this the Incubus and the whole entire squad is fighting it out right now. Diablo, this is the issue I have, because it was like his whole thing was that like he was trying to control his anger. And he's like, all right, I can't fight it out without it being angry, which is like, I don't get it. Like, he's able to confuse his powers when he's not angry. And then Enchantress tries to sway everyone by showing them their desires. I guess the baby clothes thing was because like Harley's dream was that she had a family with Joker, which was the craziest looking thing, because Joker, Jared Leto in that version looks a lot like Patrick Bateman. And I was like, this is the wrong movie that you the wrong father figure in any way, shape, or form. But El Diablo is shown his family, and he's like, nah, I know what I did. I own it. And right now, I have my new family. When did we become a family?
Right. And also, real quick, do you remember Jared Leto was in American Psycho, right?
Oh, yes.
He's Paul Allen. You're not that far off.
I completely, yep, forgot. Yep. These are just aspirations of his. He was just like, I'm going to get that role in some way, shape, or form.
But yeah, you're 100% right. When did they become a family? I don't even know why they're all there.
Yeah. So now that Diablo, he has to fight off against Incubus, he channels his future, like his greatest power. I'm going to make an assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So there are several times in scenes where they're like showing Diablo's firepower, in which you see this face. I believe that what they were trying to do was that Diablo's power is connected to the Aztec god of fire, day and heat, Xutukutli.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where they were going with it. I feel like we could have at least explained some part of that in the film. Because, like, it would have provided a bit more roundness to his character versus he's just the angry guy that could just shoot fire, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like there was a scene in a Constantine movie that gave more context to the god, an Aztec god, than this. And it was like a 2-minute scene. So he does become this god. He holds Incubus in place. At this point, a bunch of sacrifices happen because Diablo sacrifices his life to ensure that the bomb goes off and Incubus is standing on top of the bomb. Underneath, Scott Eastwood sacrifices himself to set off the bomb. And you're wondering, okay, maybe he needed to set off the bomb. Maybe he was the only one who could. The thing is, Killer Croc survives the bombing, and the Killer Croc is right underneath the bomb. So you really could have just sent Killer Croc to do it, and Scott Eastwood did not need to die.
Right.
You must also be asking, how did they know the bomb was going to kill Incubus? Right? Well, anyway, the next thing in this movie that
Wait,
happens.
actually, I did have one more question.
Yeah.
You also must be thinking this bomb must have a timer that it could have easily reset. No.
Apparently not. It's one of those you gotta hold them down bombs, you know, that are all the rage. So now with Incubus out of the way, Enchantress decides to actually do something. And she goes into phase two of the boss battle where she can teleport. And let's be honest, if you are a teleporting magical witch and you are facing a human team, because there are no metahumans on this
There are no
team. I also
none.
want to point that out. Killer Croc maybe counts, but I don't think he's technically a metahuman either. I don't know how that
I'll
works.
give him the metahuman status, but I'll give him like peak human physical conditioning, if anything. Like he's strong, but it's just like he would have to capture his opponent and you can teleport. How you getting captured?
Right. And it's also Incubus can take a sword to the hand and get his hand cut off and grow it back without a problem. It's never really established if like, do bullets hurt Enchantress? Would they do anything to her?
I mean, I feel like she could probably dodge them from the way she was like wiggling when
That's
she
true.
was. Yeah. She probably got some,
Right.
that's that Ultra Instinct kicking in.
But somehow they hold her own. She decides to stop fighting all of a sudden and says, you know, you've earned mercy. I'm not sure why they have. And she gives them one last chance to submit. Harley uses this chance to kneel and say, hey, if you give me Joker, if you bring back Joker, I will side with you. So she kneels. And while she's kneeling, Harley cuts out Enchantress's heart. And then they. Rick Flag has another bomb. He has another bomb just over here and decide to destroy the magical portal Enchantress is doing. Because remember, that's a thing. I forgot. I legitimately forgot about it.
I thought it was a machine.
Right. Whatever the hell she's building, they decide to blow up and they throw the bomb at the portal. And now they have to shoot it. And Deadshot has to take the shot. The emotional apex of this movie, I feel, is supposed to be Rick Flag. His girlfriend is June Moon slash Enchantress, doesn't want to hurt her. Why isn't he taking the shot?
That was my same question. And I had it like fully made me question it even more because in the image of like what's happening and the as he's taking this shot, he's using Harley's gun. Harley has a gun that the revolver has in different slots. Love, hate, love, hate. When Deadshot pulls the trigger, the revolver moves from hate to love, implying that he is doing all of this that in order for his daughter to be seen as a great guy. What we're basically telling everyone is that love saves all. Yet Deadshot did the same thing that he did in the beginning of killing someone with a gun, regardless if it was for hate or love or money. It is still the same thing. It is not an emotional moment that we needed to see, nor did we need to see many of these scenes in slow-mo. This is unfortunately like I think the Snyder concept still kind of like ingrained in the system. A lot of this didn't need to be slow-mo. Deadshot taking the shot, showing that love prevails all, does not make any sense here. And in this moment, it also doesn't kind of really work because at that moment, when Enchantress has fallen, they have possession of the heart once again. And Rick Flag is demanding for Enchantress to turn back into June Moon. Enchantress is like, she doesn't exist anymore. So he crushes the heart. And instead of it just like ending it there, thinking that like he had to sacrifice June for the cause, June comes back to life. So literally, we could have ended this movie without actually taking that shot at all and just have him crush the heart, save ourselves like maybe 5 minutes of film.
Oh yeah, and
at this after this point, she doesn't come back. And I'm not just talking about in the sequel, the reboot sequel. She doesn't come back in this movie at all. That's her last scene in the movie. She's just gone. The person this movie was about? Question mark. So now that that's done and there are no stakes, Amanda Waller just shows up and says, "Hey, you convicts, you're not going anywhere." But they are able to negotiate for a few things. Killer Croc asks for BET. If you didn't hear that, that was our faces going for real. That's what we're doing. Harley asks for an espresso machine, and Deadshot asks if he can hang out with his daughter, which means using new math to explain the trajectory of a gunshot. And you know, that's really hard, the new math. I don't kill people, daughter, remember that? Anyway, so as Deadshot boxes for some reason, I don't know how that helps him be a better shooter. The Joker arrives.
He also hugs the thing.
he hugs the punching bag. Also, Rick feels bad for taking Deadshot in. Why? I don't know.
He still committed crimes.
A lot of crimes. It was a lot of chains. Anyway, Joker busts into the jail, saves Harley, and that's the last scene of this movie, of the movie proper. But there's a post credits.
Yeah, there's a post credit scene where Amanda Waller again is meeting with people. This time, Bruce Wayne in a bought out restaurant. The two of them are exchanging information. She gets all the details. He gives him all the details from the binder, which includes additional people, such as like Ezra Miller's Flash, Jason Momoa's Aquaman. And it seems as if Bruce is saying, like, hey, I'm putting a team together. I'm trying to get some friends. That's really just it. And in that moment, Amanda Waller hints that she knows that he's Batman by saying, you're working too late at night. So he says, you need to stop the Suicide Squad before my friends put your friends down. And you would expect that we would get a Suicide Squad versus Justice League movie, but we don't, because this is how we knew that this universe was ending.
And also, this was canonically before he met anyone else. So,
yes,
with friends, Batman.
With friends, they are people you pass on the street. That is it.
So that is Suicide Squad 2016. Now, before we get to our caper cap, before our determinations of what you should do with this movie, is it fun garbage to watch? Is it just too much of a mess? We want to bring this back. So we're going to explain what happened to this movie. And but before we get into that, what is this, anything like the comics at all? Is this taken from something? You're the expert, so please tell me, is this from something?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. I feel like basically this is a fresh new story, just including characters from the comics. I think the favorite thing that I've like come across in like trying to find any details was that this movie was heavily inspired by the new 52 Suicide Squad. And that's not quite true. Because, yeah, like some characters were similar, but none of these stories match up. None of these dynamics. In fact, some of these characters were created for the first time here on film. So it does seem really out there to be like, you know, like, New 52 Suicide Squad was heavily influenced by these people, because also at that point, they were basically rebooting the universe in the comics, because this is when Rebirth was coming out, in which like all these comics were trying to match up with what we're seeing in the characterizations on film. And then even then they changed up the character lineup. There was no El Diablo. Like, he had some comics, but then he was like gone. In fact, they recruited Zod at one point for the Suicide Squad.
How? So, whoa.
Right. So there's no proper comic that I would say any of these stories are truly pulling from. I think this is just a very, very self-contained story based off of what was happening in the Batman, Superman, Man of Steel verse that was already being created, the Snyderverse here. So, points for creative liberty, but I have no idea how how this even progressed, honestly.
Okay, well, so not comic accurate, you're saying. So, what happened to this movie behind the scenes? So first, some alternate casting. They wanted Tom Hardy to play Rick Flagg 4 years after he played Bane, which I think would have confused pretty much everybody.
It's the same universe. I'd be like, yo, let's kill off characters that might be people that we might be bringing up in the movie in other universes, i.e. Amanda Waller in the Arrowverse.
Right. So, don't know. They also wanted Shia LaBeouf to be Scott Eastwood's character, but while David Ayer wanted him, the studio said no. which most studios are doing nowadays to Shia LaBeouf. The original version of this movie was 20 minutes longer, 143 minutes. It had no pop songs whatsoever. And it had a very serious tone. So, originally in the movie, the third act was completely different. In the third act of this movie, Harley would have refused Joker. She would have not, she refused to go with him. Joker would have made a deal with Enchantress to get Harley back. And in the process of making this deal, his helicopter would have fallen. He would have had a half-burned face. They would have possessed Katana, and Katana would have actually fought against the other members of the Suicide Squad. Diablo would have survived. There would have been no heroic sacrifice for Diablo. He would have just been fine.
Damn, bro. He was like, I gotta
And
get out of this.
yeah,
That's what basically what he
he
said.
was just like, I'm just gonna go chill in my cell now. And also, the big reveal of this movie would have been that Enchantress wasn't just doing this for shits and giggles. She would have been controlled by Steppenwolf. The machine she was building would have been a mother box to set up Justice League and how the humans would have gotten their hands on the mother box that transforms Victor. This would have been it. They would have taken it from Enchantress and it would have rolled into the next movie.
Wow, that actually would have made way more sense. Because it was like, yeah, why was this? And even looking at it, it does look a lot like the design looks a lot like what was being set up in like Justice League for like the look of the mother box being activated. Wow. Drop the dang ball.
Yeah. Oh, and I promised to explain why Deadshot was so conflicted about killing Harley. Originally, the movie was going to spend a bulk of its time developing a relationship between Deadshot and Harley that was romantic. They would have fallen in love. So, in the staircase, when she asks, "Have you ever been in love?" that would have been a continuation of their storyline of falling in love. Additionally, Joker would have been more abusive in this, in David Ayer's original film. So Harley would have been getting away from the Joker with Deadshot. And by the end of the movie, they would, Deadshot and Harley would start a romantic relationship.
Wow. And it's not like we haven't even seen that before, because that's what happens in was it Assault on Arkham? So it actually would have made a lot of sense. Cause it did feel. And the funny thing was, like, I feel like a lot of people just felt like that was like behind the scenes actor tension that was going on. But that would have made way more sense, because not only do we just see like a lot of them together, like a lot of the dialogue together even seems kind of like flirty in ways. When he was just like, stay evil. Like, why would he be telling her that specifically and not like a bunch, anyone else that was in the crowd?
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, I dang, kind of actually want the ire cut now.
Well, it's funny you say that, because it's not happening. So this is what
No.
happened. So the movie was getting ready to be released, but the editor left the project, in the middle of post-production. Now they were left with a movie that had tons of Joker scenes that were cut, for time, and it was a serious cut. So they had an audience testing of David Ayer's cut at the time, but they also had the company that cut the teaser trailer, which was very successful. They had the teaser trailer company recut the movie, and they took scenes out of order because the original cut was all in chronological order. It did not jump around time. The new cut was all mixed up. It was fun. It ha was emphasized in jokes. They tested both cuts of the movie. Both of them tested about the same. So their solution was take random scenes from the first cut, take random scenes from the new cut, Frankenstein them together, and that's what this movie is. Two cuts of movies that did not work, smashed together.
Oh my gosh, no.
That's why nothing in this movie feels coherent and cohesive because it probably wasn't in the same movie originally.
Oh my gosh, that makes wow. You know, it does make, because I was like, the even watching, it was like the pacing seems off. The fact that I was like picking up on the fact like the daytime to nighttime shift was just too drastic, it did feel like separate films. Lo and behold, like this is definitely giving a little bit of like group project energy a little bit.
Yes.
This is another example. Please don't use all AI to craft your work. I know this wasn't technically AI, but I feel like it's on par at times.
Yeah. So that's what happened behind the scenes. So now here's the million-dollar question. After all of this, knowing the history, having watched the film again, is it Cape? Fun Cape adventure, despite not being the best film, or is it Cap? Put this in a hole and throw away the hole. Where are you?
It's just like what Amanda Waller would say. Oh man, I'm on the fence now. I originally was gonna give this a cape because it's a fun superhero movie just to keep on in the background. Like, I'm not looking for this for context. I'm not looking for this for a wonderful acting or anything like that. I was just like, this is a perfect, like, if it happens to be on TV, I may not change the channel. But now with this additional context, I think this is a cap. I think this is a cap. This is wild. The fact that it is two films put into different lenses entirely and now being forced together. This does not, this shouldn't have been done. It's unfortunately a slap in the face. I'm sorry to use that term to like actors like Will Smith and Margot Robbie, who are like, I'm pretty sure they were like banking on this film doing really well, being included in this universe at the very earliest of stages. You know, it's a shame to see that even like actors like a man like Viola Davis, who had to like sit through these like crazy scenes, and even thinking about some of the characterizations really truly didn't make sense. Because yeah, the flow isn't right. The fact that you can just pick up on the time of the day differences is terrible. I really was hoping better for this film. There are some things that I'm just like, I do wish they could have dived in a bit more on. Like, I could sense what they were trying to do between the comparison between Rick Flag and Deadshot, but it's just it needed a little bit more. Just give us a little bit more, because it was like that whole cut and run line. It was just like that could have been the theme of your paper here. And unfortunately, you didn't do it. This was off the mark. This was work. This was more of an intentional miss than Deadshot trying to hit Harley.
Yeah. And to answer your question of, did they deserve better?
The fact is, this is the fourth highest grossing film in the DCU. On a budget of $175 million, it made $749 million, which
Wow.
is significant profit. And we have to remind you, this is an Academy Award-winning film.
That is true. That is
So
true.
it is the
Don't
only
sway me back to Cape, okay? Like, I
no.
already made my decision.
This is the only film in the DCU with an Academy Award. So credit where credit is due. Killer
Yes.
Croc looks great. Killer Croc looks great. Harley's makeup looks great. Tattoo Man, I suppose he looks great.
I wonder how long it took him to wash off all of
Yeah.
that
He did it for the Academy.
Oh man, but okay. Well, a Cap Academy Award winning film. I'm not even gonna try to give it back a little. I was originally gonna be like, it has like a low cape, like that one that Captain Marvel Shazam has back in Justice League Unlimited, the one that just like hangs off his shoulder. But no, this is Cap. Well, how about you? What are you thinking? Cape or Cap?
Oh, Cap, no question.
Even need to ask. It was just like
This I really went into this hoping to have a little cheesy fun, because I remember seeing this in theaters, and actually the first time I saw it, I thought it wasn't bad. But having watched it a few years later, with all the knowledge of movies and everything I've gained, this just isn't a movie, you know? It's a series. You spend 40 minutes getting introduced to characters, and then the plot starts. And if you poke at the plot with a stick, it completely falls apart. And along the way, there are big stretches of this movie where legitimately nothing happens. So it's not campy. It's not, you know, it's not at least, no, there's nothing, there's not enough fun elements in this movie. Like, they try to be fun, but they don't convince me. And there are just so many other good Suicide Squad stories. Plug, we covered some of them on
Yes.
our in earlier seasons. Watch Assault on Arkham, watch Hell to Pay, watch Suicide Squad 2021. Watch the Arrow episode of Suicide Squad. Watch the Justice League episode of Suicide Squad. Play Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League, maybe.
Yeah, which actually matches up better with the goal that Amanda Waller had of like, in the event that Superman comes in and tries to take us all over, what is our contingency plan? That is the game that was actually explained and shown out.
Amazing. See, the game got it. And if I had to make an RT alteration here, just one there, I mean, so much. The fun of any Suicide Squad movie is finding out what Amanda Waller's secret agenda is. What she says is never what it says on the tin. And here the twist was supposed to be she's in the city. Not good enough, guys. The twist should have been Enchantress. We should not have known that she was working with Enchantress at all. That should have been a complete surprise. That way, when Deadshot finds out, we can be as upset as him. Because I'd love to get to that emotional state. I'd love to be outraged. But the fact is, and like in other movies where Amanda Waller is saying, you know, let all those people die because the mission's over, or hey, your mission actually wasn't to get data, it was actually this to find this important item. You know, those are fun twists. But here, we know the entire movie that Amanda Waller did this. So why make it a surprise to anyone? It's not a surprise. Would that save the movie? No, it wouldn't. But maybe
Would
maybe
have given us
closer.
it would have given it the cape that Captain Marvel has, if
Yeah.
anything.
So as we wind down here, I have to ask, because we brought it up, would you watch the air cut of this movie as he originally intended the movie to be presented?
As long as it's not like 4 hours long, like Zack Snyder's Justice League, filled with lamenting singing, I would, yeah. I think I would definitely, because I did the things that you mentioned that was originally a part of his film are the things that I was like, I feel like we need that as I was watching this version. And I have seen the director's cut version of it too, where it's just basically just more Harley fighting, like fighting against Joker. Like, I think there's one scene where she rides a motorcycle in the director's cut, and I'm just like, okay, cool. But yeah, I think I would need to see it just because I need to see the tonal shift. Hearing how he was going to have Harley and Deadshot in a relationship, in a romantic relationship, like as you see it progressing throughout the film, it would have made more sense. I think also it's such a drastic moment about like Joker's story in general, where it's just like his, it doesn't seem at all like his motivation should be that he's trying to get Harley, like save Harley, and he has access to all of this stuff. Like, it does feel very out of place that like he's so adamant about trying to save her, yet we don't know how long she's been in there, and yet he didn't try saving her before. But by the end of the film, it seems like it was an easy enough plan to do. So it feels like I needed a different characterization of Joker, which it sounds like the Iyer cut would have done for me. And I really did not want to see a Joker who was willing to leap in to the vat for Harley. Like, it was so out of place for me that I was just like, it seems like for me, I was like, Joker would have walked away and then have Harleen come out of the vat and then just meet him wherever he is. Him jumping in didn't make much sense.
Yeah. You also could have, just climbed up to the vat from down there. You didn't have to fall from that
Oh
distance.
yeah. Yeah, I feel like there's a security system in place, like a pole on the side that she can hold on to so you can pull her out.
You could just kind of like dip in there.
Right.
Yeah.
How about
Also,
you?
right.
Do you want to
No. I originally I was interested in seeing what the air cut had to offer, but I think the thing that did it for me was I'm actually the opposite of what you're saying. Finding out that there was supposed to be a planned romance between Deadshot and Harley Quinn, and that Joker was going to be a bigger part, I think that makes this movie into an even bigger mess, because now the emotional story we're supposed to be following is June and Rick Flag. So putting in any more romance into this film already dilutes that further. Right now, if this was a soup, it would be a drop of that romantic relationship. So I think it just adds not it adds more clutter, and it becomes more crowded and cluttered. So I think shut down the air cut. I'm sorry. Put it, keep it in the vault. Let's let this one go. Let's
Put it in
move
the
on
hole.
to other stories.
We're gonna put it in the hole and then throw the hole away, as like Amanda Waller would say.
Exactly. I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again. gonna be honest with
Fair point. There are way better
you.
Suicide Squad movies out there in
yeah.
even just episodes. Like, we'll watch those instead. All right, but even though there is no comic book connection to this film whatsoever, I did want to share a little bit about what's to come, because as we are in the stage now of DCU, this is the dawn of the DCU currently happening in comics, which will eventually lead to basically every property across DC Entertainment being connected. So from movies to shows to even the comic books, right now they're setting all that up, including setting up Amanda Waller to be the biggest bad of the DCU currently. Coming this summer, there are plans to create a series in which Amanda Waller tries to take out basically every single metahuman. If you are a hero with powers, you're about to be gone. If you're a hero without powers, you're about to be gone. She is setting up for war because she believes that we're coming to the end of the metahuman existence. And especially that she sees it being a battle between the powered and the unpowered. So Amanda Waller has been, as I mentioned, has been setting things up with some help. She's been setting things up for war since the events of Dark Crisis. After the events of Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths, the Justice League was disbanded. The Titans became the premier team of the DCU. And at one point, Amanda Waller had traveled to Earth 3, saw what the crime syndicate could have done, showing what people with powers could do when they're unchecked. So now that she is back, thanks to the help of some mysterious benefactor, she has done things to create war, such as creating Beast World, where basically a bunch of the heroes and villains were turned into animalistic creatures. And she's also established her new Suicide Squad. This is honestly, it feels like a rotating list because she is really getting a lot of people together that include members like Peacemaker, because of his fame after the television series. A counterpart of his called Peace Wrecker. Dr. Hate, who is basically an evil version of Dr. Fate.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. An evil robot version of Batman called Failsafe. That was created by Batman.
Oh, well, not a very good failsafe.
And also the Brainiac Queen. So right now, Superman in Action Comics is going through the House of Brainiac story arc. So Brainiac Queen is going to be coming out of that. And this is all to get evil versions of all these characters to come join her side because she feels that you got to fight fire with fire. And as I mentioned, after her trip to Earth 3, this mysterious benefactor brought her forward to meet with this organization called the Council of Light, which might sound very familiar to our Young Justice fans. And the Light has tasked Amanda Waller with killing every single metahuman on Earth, which she happily accepted. So in the summer, we're going to get Absolute Power, and we're seeing it start off with issue number 9 of the latest Green Arrow series, where Green Arrow, finding out that Roy has been taken into custody by Amanda Waller, but unsure of like where he is, decides to try to infiltrate what Amanda Waller is doing. In this comic, she's currently in the Hall of Justice, which has been completely emptied out, with her team, and they are taking apart the entire hall, collecting all the items the Justice League left behind. And Green Arrow is coming back from being wiped from existence after finding out that Malcolm Merlyn had been responsible for his elimination from existence at one point. So he decides that he needs to find out what Amanda Waller is doing by deciding to work with her, because she says that if you work with me, I'll give you back Roy Harper. And one of his first missions is to break into Sanctuary and steal the secrets, which Sanctuary is from the Heroes in Crisis story limited series, which we covered back in our Static Shock episode on gun violence. So definitely check that out if you want to find out more about what Sanctuary is. But it's basically a safe haven for heroes to heal after traumatic events. So she is plotting to do something that's going to involve most likely the heroes in their most vulnerable state, showing that once again, Amanda Waller is that one that you do not want to mess with.
You can't even go to the hospital. Like, she'll find you.
All right. So yeah, and that's it. So prepare for that. In the meantime, that's going to wrap up our episode here. Join us next week as we continue Cape or Cap, following another film that basically, I guess, ended this universe, X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Oh, yes. So before you come and say we're just hating on DC, no, everyone's getting it. And in honor of X-Men, the animated series beginning, yeah. Let's see it end.
All right. So be sure to support us on Patreon and check us out on our socials for updates on episodes that you can find across Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and many other platforms. Take care of yourselves and remember that while we don't normally condone gun violence on this show, if you can get the U.S. government to secure your kid's success in an Ivy League school, get your Lori Loughlin on, y'all.
And if you have a bomb that needs to go off underwater and you have a crocodile that is kind of a metahuman, let him do it. Stay dry, stay alive.
Thanks again for listening. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.